Good evening, high school sports fans across America. This is the NHSCA Sports Hour for June the 28th. I'm Jeff Fisher, host of the show and founder and editor-in-chief of High School Football America and highschoolfootballamerica.com, here for 2 hours worth of high school sports talk tonight on the Artist First Radio Network. After we wrap things up here on the NHSCA Sports Hour, we'll roll right into High School Football America at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, and we'll tell you about that show in just a little bit of time. Want to get things started here tonight. You may remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about our coaches of the year and our national senior athletes of the year. Tonight we want to recognize the ones that get it done in the classroom and on the field or on the court. The National High School Coaches Association proud to announce the 2012 NHSCA High School Academic All-Americans for the 2011-2012 school year. Now this year marks the 19th year in which the NHSCA has honored those who triumphed both in and out of the classroom. This year's selection totals 122 Academic All-Americans. These student athletes hail from 27 states and one European country, and this year's honorees excel in 10 different sports. The total breakdown is as follows. There were 7 freshmen, 25 sophomores, 32 juniors, and 58 senior student athletes. Connecticut leading the way this year with 24 Academic All-Americans. Arizona following in second with 18. And rounding out the top three, Georgia, they had 10 Academic All-Americans. These student athletes averaged a 3.77 GPA, with 26 All-Americans coming in with a perfect GPA of 4.0 or better if it was weighted a little bit higher. Our executive director, Bob Ferraro Jr., saying the members of this year's all-academic team define what it means to be a student athlete today, and the organization is extremely proud to honor these fine student athletes. They are both leaders on the field and in the classroom, and the future leaders of tomorrow. All of the Academic All-Americans will be recognized in the National High School Sports Hall of Fame Museum, which will be built in Easton. And if you go to the website, nhsca.com, I'll also put this out on Twitter for you tonight. You can see all of the honorees. Again, there's 122 of them. Be a little tedious to read everybody's name on the air here right now, but again, congratulations to all, and I'll put that out on Twitter. And by the way, if you want to follow the NHSCA Sports Hour on Twitter, all you have to do is find our handle, which is NHSCA Radio Show. NHSCA Radio Show, and that's how you follow us on Twitter and keep up to date with everything. So again, always love wrapping up the year with all of our honorees, whether it's the Academic All-Americans or whether it's the Coaches of the Year or the Players of the Year. It's a fun time of year for us, so congratulations to all again. Go to NHSCA.com. All of the news releases are there, and you can follow along and see who was honored this year by the National High School Coaches Association. Reminder for you, coming up on the 4th of July here, the 16th annual NHSCA U.S. Open is all set for the 6th and 7th of July at the Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Registration is still underway. You can register, up until July the 1st. The 2012 NHSCA U.S. Open, again, held July 6th and 7th at the Harrisburg Farm Show Arena Complex. So this is the 16th year that this event will take place, and it's good quality folk-style wrestling. If you want to learn more, just go to nhsca.com, click on Events, the tab there, and that will take you to the page where you can register and get everything all set and ready to go. Going to kick the show off tonight with a conversation with Scott Hallenbeck. Scott is the executive director of USA Football, and USA Football will be the host for this year's World Championships. They did it back in 2009 in Canton, Ohio, and Team USA won the gold medal. And this year, 8 teams will be descending upon Austin, Texas. Practice already underway. The first round, the quarterfinals, will be held on Saturday. That's this Saturday, June the 30th. And the USA will take on American Samoa in the first round. The gold medal game is set for July the 7th in Austin, Texas. And Scott Hallenbeck has been one of the guys instrumental in getting these world championships together. Over 60 nations now playing American-style football. Yes, you know, we've got football over there spelled a different way, but American-style football catching on around the nation. And Scott Hallenbeck joined me a couple of weeks ago on High School Football Football America to talk about these world championships and why it's so important for the organization to be behind these sorts of events. And here's that interview from a couple of weeks ago from High School Football America. It's Scott Hallenbeck from USA Football. So tell us about the genesis of the idea to have a world championship in American football.
Certainly. So first of all, actually the timing's sort of interesting, right, with the Olympics coming up, and more I see commercials on TV about Olympic trials. So you'll have the U.S. swimming and the U.S. Track and field and so forth and so on, all the different Olympic-related sports. Well, each of those sports have what they call an international federation. So think of FIFA and soccer and FIBA and basketball and those, of course, are acronyms. And then the acronym for football, believe it or not, is IFAF, so International Federation of American Football. Well, every international federation's job, really, is to host world championships. And then, of course, the International Olympic Committee's job is to host the Olympics. So actually, this group called IFAF has been around since 1998. And they've hosted what they would call men's world championships, and that would be 20 years old and above. And they started that in 99, and then our first ever men's world championship was in 2007, took college grads to Japan at that time, and then it's every 4 years. Well, so as I came back from that 2007 world championships, I said, you know, frankly, the problem with the International Federation, the challenge, I should say, is that they're trying to take, especially around the rest of the world, they're trying to take sort of 17, 18, 19-year-old, say, rugby players or soccer players or other athletes and convert them into American football players and hope they have some sort of a sustainable model. Well, frankly, our own experience in sports and certainly in the U.S. would tell you that that's not going to work. You need that sort of pyramid of participation. And so I really made it a concerted effort within the International Federation. I'm on the executive committee and so forth, and really pushed that we start pushing down in terms of world championships. So a U19 world championships, and eventually maybe even a U15 world championships. But you know that's for another day. Right now, is in 2009, we launched the first ever IFAF Under-19 World Championships. It was in Canton, Ohio. It was a fabulous event. You know, football-rich state, obviously. And, you know, yet this whole new dynamic called international football, national teams, you know, it took, frankly, a long time to convince state associations and coaches' associations and the NCAA and so forth and so on that, look, the same things you have in place for all these other sports, we are doing for American football, so let's rally around it, let's support it. And long story short is we got that, but we did something very purposely, and that is we made the World Championships every 2 years starting in 2012. So it was 2009, now 2012, and then it'll go 2012, 14, 16, 18, rather than every four, because, again, we're trying to force these other we're trying to force IFAF, frankly, as well as the other countries to focus on the development of their U19 programs. So again, that just feeds into their men's programs, and now we're starting to build a true sustainable model.
The championships coming up this year in Austin for all of our listeners. That's starting on June the 30th and moving through the 7th with the championship game in July. We're talking with Scott Hallenbeck, Executive Director of USA Football, the governing body for America's wonderful sport. So what were some of the hurdles you had to overcome back in 2009 that you've now kind of, you've got the model down? So what's different from the first time around to this year in Austin?
Well, so obviously the first time it's always literally just about education. I mean, making people aware of something called IFAF and then national teams and so convincing parents and coaches and again sort of the NCAA and everything that we'd like to do this and that it's real. And you know, there's eight countries that are coming to participate in an Olympic style event with an opening ceremonies and a closing ceremonies and playing for a gold, silver, and bronze. Medal is took a little time and a little education. But the great news is everyone from college coaches to high school coaches to certainly parents and players embraced it in a big way. So coming out of the 2009 event and starting to talk about 2012, fortunately there was enthusiasm for it. I mean, I think it was nearly 50,000 people came to the tournament games, in 2009. I mean, then the neat thing was, of course, right, this is where you wear USA across your chest. And what other opportunity you ever get to do that? So to see the fans, I've got pictures throughout my office, actually, of the fans, you know, painted faces and USA signs. And, you know, it's not about the such and such a high school team or even such and such a college team. This is your country, and it's very easy to get to rally around that. And so, again, added a whole new dimension, really exciting. But now leading into 2012, frankly, we're caught up in the in just the changes that are happening in football. I mean, one example would be that more and more now colleges, especially Division I schools, are asking for their recruits to come in almost like the week or two after they graduate from high school.
Right.
So we used to have largely high school graduates, so rising freshmen in college. And we'd work out with a number of college coaches that were very, very supportive, that they would often just give us their red shirts because, you know, God forbid, we don't want a kid to get hurt and they don't want a kid to get hurt that might potentially be a true freshman starter. And so we worked that out in 2009, and it worked out beautifully. And then this year, frankly, we're changing the model a little bit where we have some rising freshmen, but mostly rising seniors. And that was a pretty dramatic change where we worked it out with the state associations and obviously the various coaches and families and so forth. So this is sort of it continues to evolve. But the good news is it all sort of comes back to the same concept. I've heard more coaches say to us, look, if you're asking me, can I withhold the opportunity to let this young man represent his country, potentially the only time in his entire life, you know, I would never do such a thing. If a parent's saying this thing, I can't not let my son represent his country. And often the coach, the next comment out of the coach's mouth is, hey, can I coach? So it's pretty exciting. It's truly unique. We are the only organization in the entire country, like any other governing body, that's allowed to host national teams, again, recognized by the NCAA and the National Federation of State High School Associations. And it's not, the other important message here is it's not an all-star game. It's very important. This is a national team, recognized as such, sanctioned as such. In fact, a high school player is still allowed to compete in two all-star games. So they can compete in a national team game and then two all-star games. Whereas if they don't compete in that, allowed two all-star games. So an important distinction because some people get that confused.
That's right. We're talking with Scott Hallenbeck, the executive director of USA Football tonight on High School Football America. Just so you know, the eight teams in this year's World Championships coming up a little bit later, about a week or so from now. America Samoa, it's Austria, Canada, France, Japan, Panama, Sweden, and then the host team, the United States. Let's talk about the future here. Obviously, and Steve Speck pointed this out, being the head coach of this year's team. You know, a lot of the countries way, way behind America. But what's kind of the upside of all this? If you went into your crystal ball 5 to 10 years from now, I mean, where will America's game, the high school game, be overseas?
Well, so just compare it to basketball, right? What, 50, 60 years ago, maybe more, that the U.S. team used to kick everybody's tail, and then all of a sudden, you know, we saw that change in probably the late 80s, maybe even early 90s. All of a sudden, you had the dream team, right? We couldn't have, in the Olympics, you couldn't have, top college amateur players anymore. They had to go with the professionals. So, and then around the country now, look at the NBA. Almost every single team has an international player, often one of the best players on the team, certainly most fundamentally sound. So, you know, the future is ideally duplicating what basketball and other sports have accomplished, and that is grow the game internationally, start to see some terrific athletes develop around the world. We've seen that, actually. We host something called the International Bowl in February, National Signing Day, and there's the top 45 young men representing Team USA, and then the top 45 players from around the world represent the world team. And we've done this now 3 years, and each year the world team would the game was closer and closer until this past year beating us. And frankly, every year the coaching staff has the same challenge. They say, we're trying to convince our young men that the players and the team that's lining up on the other side of the field, the other side of the ball, are serious. They want to flat out win this game. They're going to try to knock you on your tail. So you know what? Come ready to play. It takes them usually the first quarter, first half to realize it, and then they got to fight their way back from a deficit. And this year they just couldn't get it done. So there are significantly talented players around the world. Not as many, of course, as you you'd have in Canada or the U.S. or even Mexico at this point. But the game is growing. There's now some 62 countries around the world, and just a few years ago, there was only 40. The number of top countries has probably shifted from maybe 5 or 6 to probably in the neighborhood of 10 to maybe 12, and that's growing. So the future is, again, it's seeing the game grow and prosper, and the love that we have for the game in this country will continue to grow in places like Japan, that's just celebrated 75 years of American football over there.
Wow.
And they have a robust corporate league. They have a strong university league. They have a growing high school and even youth leagues now. So they're building that paradigm or that that pyramid. And you're just seeing the development happen, and they're falling in love with it. So they have their own, full-time football magazine and talk radio and blogs and all this kind of stuff. Now, all the little pieces that we see in this country that keeps the game strong, keeps people talking about it, those are popping up around the world. So there's excitement and a growth of the game that hopefully someday leads to. I know someone made comment one time of where's my Yao Fling, right? We want to see their Chinese quarterback, and someday we're going to see that, and that'll add again another new dimension. And oh, by the way, it runs simultaneous to the NFL's interest in growing the game internationally. So they might have two games in London and potentially a game in Mexico. It's somewhere in the future and so forth and so on. So we're all sort of working together to grow the game around the world.
Sky is the limit. Let's switch to your coach, who we mentioned that Steve Speck was on back on our show here on the 10th of May. And Steve is one of those guys that's a real champion of what the World Championships are about. And frankly, on a personal note, I don't think there's a better coach in the country when it comes to, caring about kids and caring about the game. He was just talking about how important it was for him when you guys came calling as to make him the head coach to accept that. Tell me a little bit about your feeling on Steve Speck as the leader of USA.
Well, and actually, interestingly enough, just take a step back. In 2009, we got Chuck Kyle, who's another, just mm-hmm. stellar human being, as is Coach Speck. And the first comment out of Coach Kyle's mouth was, "I got to have Coach Speck on my staff." And I was like, "Thank you." We already researched him as well, and he was great. So, and we try. This is all new again, and we're sort of working our way through the development of this. But when we looked at the next iteration, so obviously from 2009 to 2012, we said, "Okay, let's try to sort of build from within." So let's look at those first 10 high school national team coaches, and let's look. Guy who'd be in who would take 2012, and then from there we'll build to 2014 and so forth and so on. And Coach Speck was a natural. It's everything you've described. I mean, first and foremost, he's just a wonderful human being, and obviously cares deeply about his players, about his coaching staff, and then you do need someone who gets the concept of representing the country, and that means it goes so far beyond football. We talk about when it comes to the players that we have to have the top right players, and we take that simple phrase very, very seriously, and that is there are tons of great athletes out there, great football players out there, but when it comes to representing your country first and foremost, USA football, obviously their families, their high schools, their coaches, the list goes on and on and on, their communities, you start to narrow that list, sadly. And you get down a few kids, and that's why it is a special, special opportunity that the top 45 that not only, again, are terrific young football players, but also have great character, have great leadership and responsibility. And someone like Coach Speck, that's naturally who he wants. He knows how to mold those young men in a very short period of time. I mean, our International Bowl is a little crazy, frankly. It's like 3 or 4 days, partly because we're trying to – we're very careful about the school window. Mm-hmm. But the summer here, I mean, it's no more than 5 or 6 or 7 days. So it's a relatively short period of time where they've got to mold the team. And you're only going to do that with kids that are of the same sort of mindset and same makeup and believe with the same coaching staff, along the same lines, that believes in representing their country, doing everything in their power to do the right things and come off with class. And we expect that Coach Speck is going to, we know Coach Speck is going to lead that kind of a coaching staff, that kind of a team. So we know we're in good hands, and frankly, we don't even think twice about it.
Yeah, talking with Scott Hallenbeck, the executive director of USA Football, the national governing body of this wonderful sport. You can go to usafootball.com to learn more about the organization. Again, we're talking the Under 19 World Championships coming up in Austin, Texas, this summer, starting on June 30th. If you're in the neighborhood, check it out. This is wonderful. I got a chance to watch it on TV last year. We could probably talk more and more about this, but before you go, since time is short, Scott, I'd love to at least let our listeners know about a program that I think it was a couple of weeks ago you announced about the Youth Equipment Grant Program. You're going to be awarding $1 million in football equipment in specific areas to start, but could you tell our listeners a little bit about that in case they're in those areas and may be in need of some refurbished equipment and getting new helmets in that?
Sure. So there's a couple things actually. Every year we host, we run a equipment grant program. It's a $1 million grant program. It's usually in April. And as you say, just go to usafootball.com. That is now, that's run its course for the 2012 year. So next April, you know, leading up to that would be when we'd run that again. And that's, an opportunity to get grants, to get new equipment and always ways to make the game better and safer. In addition to that, we've worked very closely with the NFL, the NCAA, the NFL Player Association, the four manufacturers, Riddell, Schutt, Zenith, and Rawlings, Sporting Goods Manufacturers Association, CDC, the list goes on. It brought together quite a contingent of stakeholders in football, if you will. And we all agreed that, you know, we need to seriously address the issue of equipment. And a group called NERA, which is the National Reconditioners Association, set out a new rule that 10-year-old helmets and older will no longer be reconditioned. And then the idea behind it is to get those off the field. So we, in conjunction with those various parties that I mentioned, we set up about a new, really actually it's a pilot program this year in four major markets. It's the Cleveland area, the New Orleans area, the New York area, and the Bay Area. And it's specifically for underserved or in need leagues to start and say, okay, let's go into those leagues, and there's been an application process and so forth, and so it's actually run its course, but now we're in the process of, we identified leagues, they would go in and say, this is how many 10-year-older helmets we had, we then, we're actually right in the process now of NERA sending out representatives, reconditioning experts to actually go in and confirm that they had that many 10-year-old helmets, because frankly, we learned through this process that it's extremely hard to track and to monitor and really understand clearly what a 10-year-old helmet is. It's just, it's not as easy as it needs to be. And so frankly, through all this, we're improving the best practices, we're improving the process. So it's been very helpful on a lot of levels. But we go into those areas, and if you literally were the qualified league, you told us you had, making up a number, 10-year-older helmets, we will replace them. So you get brand new helmets and replace the 10-year-older ones. And the goal, probably the important thing for your listeners, is we continue to work with the NFL and that whole group of folks, and we are looking at now how can we roll this out nationally next year. So I guess probably the best message is stay tuned, stay in touch with usafootball.com, probably for a lot of reasons, but not the least of which is more information will be coming on how this will evolve over the next probably 3 to 6 months and what it will look like sort of in January when we roll out potentially a whole new program that should be national in scope. I can't guarantee it, but we're working on those details out right now with the NFL and all the various parties. So yet another great program where we're giving back and making a difference, and ultimately all of these things lead to making the game better and safer.
Right, and the bottom line, it's about helping the kids, and that's the other thing, getting them at the young age, keeping them healthy, and keeping them enjoying the game up until whatever that level is, whether it's high school, college, or the pros. But Scott, thank you so much for taking the time, and look forward to having you back on the show here talking about some of the other wonderful things that USA Football does to keep this game strong.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
So again, that's Scott Hallenbeck, the executive director of USA Football, talking about the World Championships beginning this Saturday in Austin, Texas. If you want to learn more about the championships, go to usafootball.com. Going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Olympics. Missy Franklin, the missile, the upcoming senior at Regis Jesuit High School outside of Denver. She's going for the Olympic team. She's already made it. We're going to talk about the event she's in and how many events she can actually swim in. If all goes according to plan in a couple of weeks here, we're going to have Missy Franklin's mom on the show, as Trish Hoffman has already lined up an interview with her. She was a little superstitious, so she wanted to make sure that Missy made the Olympic team. So we'll be having that come up in a little bit. So we're going to talk some Olympics and student-athletes when we come back. This is the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artists First Radio Network.
You've heard of being named All-Conference, but only one organization has earned the classification of being All-World, the United States Navy. Whether it's humanitarian efforts, fighting terrorism, or protecting America's freedoms, the Navy is the team that helps us all win big. To learn how you can make it to the big league, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. Navy. Accelerate your life. The Navy Seahawk helicopter has a lift capacity of over 6,000 pounds. But when it comes to helping those around the world who need it most, they lift the hopes of millions. To learn more about how the Navy is the best place to do great things, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. It will do you and the world a load of good. Navy. Accelerate your life.
Back on the NHSCA Sports Hour, time to send out congratulations to a former guest on the show here at the NHSCA Sports Hour. Her name is Missy Franklin. She will be a senior this year at Regis Jesuit High School in Colorado. And when we had Missy on the show about a year and a half ago, she was talking about the dreams of making the U.S. Olympic team, the swim team, and that dream has become a reality as yesterday, she booked her ticket to London, and she has a shot at booking several more tickets to London as she has an opportunity to possibly be in six or seven events at the London Games. But she got it done yesterday as she won the 100-meter backstroke, a sizzling time, an American record when it comes to the Olympic trials, 58.85 seconds. She actually beat her her idol, Natalie Coughlin, on the way to that. Natalie finished third, so kind of puts Natalie in a position where she has only one more attempt to try and make the Olympic team at 29 years old. So kind of a little bittersweet for Missy, but Missy will also swim tonight in the 200-meter freestyle, which is another good event for her. She's won a lot of gold medals in the World Championships within the last 12 months. So Missy Franklin, again, booking her ticket. Congratulations to her. And as I mentioned before we went into the break, Trish Hoffman has been in contact with Missy's mom, and she's agreed to come on the show here. Hopefully we can get her on about 2 weeks from now. We'll take next week off for the 4th of July, but hopefully we can get her on in 2 weeks here to talk about Missy making the team. Mrs. Franklin just said, hey, you know what, I'd love to come on the show, but let's let Missy make the team first, and she's done that in fantastic fashion. So congratulations to her, and look for that interview coming up with Missy's mom in a couple of weeks here on the NHSCA Sports Hour. Another tie to the high school level and the Olympics. Mark Wizorek, he's the high school cross-country coach at Gig Harbor High School in Washington, trying to make the Olympics. He was in the trials in the 800 meters, but came up a little short. He's a guy that doesn't have a shoe contract. He just went in there and has done a great job. He ran a personal best in the trials, but he ended up finishing seventh with a time of 1 minute 45.62 seconds. But congratulations to him to try and go out there and get it done and get to the Olympics. Now, speaking of the Olympics, several weeks ago, Zach Eric from Mooresville High School, Allen in Indiana, outside of Indianapolis, was on the show. He was selected as one of the American judges for wrestling, and Zach talked a lot about the honor. His father was one of the great U.S. wrestling officials, referees in America, and he very, very proud of his dad. And his dad got him started in being a referee back when he was actually competing. So Zach Errett will be representing the U.S. at the London Games, and we thought it'd be fun to replay that interview with Zach from a couple of weeks ago about being elected to be a referee in the U.S. In the London Games, representing the U.S. at the London Olympics.
You hear that you've been chosen to work the Olympic Games. What goes through your mind? Well, it was really in a very exciting time. We went to a tournament in early March, and from the tournament, is usually when they make the selections, and they came out with a tentative list of who was going to make the Olympics, and at that time, my name was on the list, but nothing was official until just a few days ago. So when we found out the first time, I was really excited about the opportunity to be able to represent the United States. And then, to get it confirmed a few days ago was even better.
I'm assuming you're getting quite a few emails, phone calls, and all that. I mean, this is big time stuff. Tell us a little bit about the reaction from friends and family.
Family wise, it's been great. My father was a head wrestling coach and also was an Olympic level referee and was almost was very close to making the Olympics. So I think being selected, myself being able to be selected, I think he was really excited about that. His friends and colleagues, and I've had great support. Everybody sent emails, has made phone calls. People that I didn't know would even know that I made the Olympics has contacted me, congratulated me. So it's really just a great honor, and I'm really very privileged to have gotten it.
Let's talk about the lineage with your dad. I know he was USA Wrestling's Official of the Year back in the mid '90s. You've also received that honor. Tell me a little bit about the lineage there, and what sort of role your dad has played in your career, not only as a wrestler, as a wrestler, but also as a referee.
I guess my dad started when he moved to Martinsville, Indiana from St. Paris, Ohio, and he hadn't wrestled before. And at that time, he decided that he would, he was going to coach dad an assistant position opening for wrestling. So that's how he kind of got started. And, then as I came along and I started going to all the tournaments and grew up around the sport of wrestling all the time. And, my dad was my coach in high school and really, I guess, educated me on wrestling. And then as we started to progress, we started to go to, we would go to tournaments. I don't remember taking a family vacation that wasn't going to a wrestling tournament somewhere where my parents could work the tournament. And we just started going from there. And then, so as I started to referee, a little bit more as I got into middle school and high school, I started to work more events. And my dad was really just a great mentor to me. We could sit back and we could discuss situations, after the tournament would get done and be able to bounce ideas off each other of what we thought something should be called or how it should have been called. And I think it really just, not only being my dad, but, being somebody that I could really work with was just outstanding.
Yeah, it's incredible when I read that about you actually wrestling and working tournaments all at the same time. That's pretty phenomenal. I noticed in one of the quotes on the press releases that was put out about you making the Olympics, you thank your dad. You say a lot of people were instrumental in your development, including Rick Tucci, who has also, been selected. So tell me a little bit about, some guy that you obviously point out as being very instrumental in your career, and you're going to be able to go over there in London with him. What's that going to be like?
It's great. Rick is, a veteran at this. This will be his eighth Olympic Games that he's been selected to work. So, having, his kind of knowledge and experience, because it's internationally is a little different than nationally how things operate, and just having, the chance to work with him and be able to go to tournaments with him, over the past few years has been, been very educational for me. Along with the other gentlemen that I listed, Bill Steckline and Tom Clark, they've, been very instrumental in helping me become a better referee over the time. And so, being able to go with Rick as one of my mentors to the Olympics is really just, it's great, and I'm really glad that I get a chance to go over there and, represent the United States with him. Just looking at going into the tournament, I think having not been there before, I think having not done the Olympics before, I think his knowledge and how things operate will be very beneficial to me when I'm over there.
Yeah, and we're talking with Zach Arrett tonight, the head wrestling coach at Mooresville High School in Indiana. But more importantly, tonight we're talking about his selection as a referee for the Olympics in London coming up in the sport of wrestling. And you've worked the Olympic trials here in the States. You've done a lot of international stuff, but nothing like the Olympics. So have you kind of thought about how everything gets elevated? I mean, we know it's every 4 years it's one big party and everybody everybody kind of points to this, but have you kind of sat down and by yourself and said, wow, this is going to be unlike anything I've ever experienced? And if so, what goes through your mind about that?
Well, it's one of those times. I guess right now I'm still not quite sure what to expect when I get over there. I know that the way the tournament works is very similar to how the tournament that I've been to, the World Championships that I've been to the last couple of years, the tournaments kind of work the same in terms of format and things like that. There's a lot more. With the Olympics, there's a lot more at stake for the athletes and the countries involved. And I don't know that I have a good grasp on exactly what that'll be like until I'm over there. I do know that it's such a big stage and the entire world is watches this one event, that it's going to be, the pressure is going to be much larger than it has before. So I just hopefully, we'll be able to go out and still, remain calm and still do the job that I'm there to do. And I think that if I can just take out the distractions, I think it will be very similar to a lot of what I've done before in the last couple World Championships. So, but I know it's an exciting time, and I know the pressure will be big, but I'll have a better idea of what that'll be like when we start on August 5th.
And let's wrap up, give you a little bit of an opportunity to talk about your kids there at the high school at Mooresville. Tell us a little bit about your wrestling program there. You've been the head coach for 10 years, I guess, and then you also serve as an assistant football coach there. So tell me a little bit about the program and let the listeners know what it's all about in Mooresville.
Right now, we have a great group of kids on the team, and we really strive. We've had some very successful wrestlers over the past few years. A few kids that have gone on to place at our state championships. We've had a recent, back in 2005, we had a state champion who went by the name of Alex Warren, who went on to wrestle at IU. I think that, program-wise, I think we do a good job in terms of preparing kids to go out in life. I do realize that, it's really difficult to be able to make it to the next level and wrestle in college and even past that. And so we really focus on trying to get the kids ready for past high school experiences, whether that be in wrestling or whether that just be in life. And I think that, we've got a coaching staff that's, Alex Warren is one of the wrestlers that's come back, and he's now an assistant coach here at Mooresville. And I think that, we have a lot of former wrestlers that are on staff that, kind of see that and have different careers and are off doing different things. And we hope to develop the kids the best that we can. And we've got great support from our administration, from our principal, Mr. Mustin, to our superintendent, Mr. Lindsay, our athletic director, Mr. Briscoe, that really allows us to be able to do a number of things and go to tournaments and get our kids as many matches as we can based on the rules. And they allow us to travel and go to some tournaments that are, fairly far away. So I really feel blessed, being here at Mooresville, and I think that the kids have done a tremendous job here over the past few years. And I'm excited about, what we have coming up and future-wise and where the program's headed. So we're just excited excited with where we're at, but we're always looking to get better.
And let's wrap up. We are talking with Zach Arad here of Mooresville High School in Indiana, the wrestling coach there, and now an Olympic referee. And so what was it like when the kids found out? We talked about friends and family, but I got to imagine there was some pride and joy there knowing that the head coach is going there for the Olympics.
Yeah, I think there is, I think some of them kind of knew from earlier when the first list came out, because we had our banquet, and they kind of announced it at the banquet that I was going to be working the Olympics, but it wasn't official yet. So, I think they were excited. But, you never really know for sure what they say. A couple of kids have came up to me because I think ISA posted it on Twitter, and it came up, and one of the kids would say, hey, this is pretty cool, Mr. Arad. So I think it's there. I just see they haven't actually came out and told me so.
So again is Zach Arad, and congratulations to him from Mooresville High School, the head wrestling coach there. He will be representing the U.S. in the London Games coming up. So a lot of former guests here on the NHSCA Sports Hour.
dreaming of going to the Olympics and achieving those goals, and we're always happy to have him on here talking about that. I want to remind everyone, speaking of wrestling, that the 16th annual NHSCA U.S. Open will be held July 6th and 7th. Registration is still open. The cutoff date is July the 1st. $45 is the individual price for this folk-style wrestling tournament. It's the 16th year that we've held this, and again, we held the 6th and 7th of July at Harrisburg's Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. All you have to do is go to nhsca.com, click on events. The tab there will allow you to register for the 16th annual NHSCA U.S. Open. Going to take a break, come back, wrap up the show. You are listening to the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artist First Radio Network.
The hottest technology in the world isn't being developed in Silicon Valley. In the United States Navy, more top secret technologies are being created than ever before. Incredible machines made of stealth materials that fly by themselves. The only problem with these incredible technologies? It's a shame the enemy can't see them. To learn more, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. Navy, accelerate your life.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Call the American Heart Association or visit our website to learn more.
Back on the NHSCA Sports Hour, wrapping things up here on the show tonight. Remember, coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to switch it over to High School Football America. Three guests on the show tonight. I want to tell you about them. John Butler, the National Executive Director of Pop Warner, will join me at the top of the show talking about the new rules that Pop Warner has put into effect, trying to make football a little bit safer for the kids 5 to 15 who play Pop Warner football. Basically, they are limiting the amount of contact during practice and some other things. And John Butler will join us to talk about why those rules changes have gone into effect and why it's good for the overall health of football moving forward. Also on the show will be Gus Kapolka. He is the director of the Michigan High School Football Coaches Association East-West All-Star Game that will be played Saturday in Alma, Michigan at Alma College. So Gus will talk about the young men that have made that squad, 88 of the best from Michigan on the East-West All-Star squads. And Gus will also talk about some of the difficulties in putting on these summer All-Star contests as the NCAA continues to change its rules and more kids get the opportunity to enroll into college basically after December. So that's changing the complexion of the way high school All-Star football games are played. And then we'll wrap up with a conversation with Adam Brenneman. Adam is a young man ranked number one as far as tight ends in America. He will go to Penn State. He's verbally committed, but he said he will be enrolling early, so it's going to be a done deal. But before that, a little tragedy struck his life as he tore his ACL in a 7-on-7 practice a couple of weeks ago, and Adam will join us to talk about the grind of getting the knee back in shape and what he's gone through mentally. A real tough young man who will not be able to play his senior year of high school football, but not losing sight of the overall goal, which is to go to Penn State and play football in Happy Valley and get an education. Along with playing football for the Nittany Lions. So again, that's coming up at the top of the hour. High School Football America. Also, we're going to make our big announcement as High School Football America moves to California. So be sure to tune in to find out exactly what's going to happen this fall. If you're one of our listeners in the Southern California area, I think you're going to be happy with the news that we give you tonight on High School Football America. Want to thank all of our sponsors that make the show viable every week. Let's just get it done. I want to thank the U.S. Navy, Cliff Keene, Dollemure, Dr. Jared Spencer from Mind of the Athlete at mindoftheathlete.com, xcnation.com, your stop for cross-country news, a great website. We had David Taylor, one of the co-founders, on the show a couple of weeks ago. And all of our sponsors that come in year in and year out, to make all of this show possible for you this evening. Again, we want to remind you that there's still time to register for the 16th annual NHSCA U.S. Open. It will be held the 6th and the 7th of July. Capacity is unlimited, so cutoff date for registering is July the 1st. The price is $45 for this quality folk-style wrestling tournament in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the Farm Show Complex. Go on to NHSCA.com. To register. If you have any questions, you can also call the NHSCA office, but go to NHSCA.com to register again for the 16th annual U.S. Open. And again, we want to thank or congratulate all of our All-Americans. We mentioned it at the top of the show. We have 122 of them this year. We're going to tweet it out tonight on Twitter, so you can look at the release and see all of the names of the young men and women that we honored this year. And, you know, it's just been a fantastic season. We go into a little bit of a lull here as we get ready for the 2012-2013 school year. But, again, congratulations to all of our coaches of the year, our senior national athletes of the year, and our academic All-Americans for this year. Great job. Kudos to everyone. Want to thank Kyle back in Ohio for keeping the show running smoothly. For now, this is Jeff Fisher saying good night and good sports from Chicago. We'll talk to you next week on the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artists First Radio Network.